The Solid Monster sounds off.
Hulk Hogan has definitely been that rocket fuel that TNA needed.
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
Seth, you haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Welcome to episode 320 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, March 30th, 2014. I am the Solid Monster here. We are 1 week away from WrestleMania 30 in New Orleans. I will be in New Orleans in less than a week, so I'm looking forward to that. First, let me just mention that this week's Sound Off is brought to you by Audible.com. Audible is the place to go if you are into audiobooks or if you've never tried an audiobook before. We've got a deal going with them where you can sign up for free 30 days. You get one free audiobook. You can keep the audiobook whether you keep up with the Audible trial or not. It's a really good deal. Audibletrial.com/Solomonster. I know a bunch of you guys have signed up, a few more this past week, so I thank you for that. Keep the feedback coming in, too. I want to know what you guys think and what books you guys are picking, what you think of the service. And if you want to help support the show, that's just another way to do it. And get a little something out of it, because they have some good stuff up there. Audibletrial.com/Solomonster is the URL to go to if you are interested in trying the 30-day trial. So thank you to all those who have. Also, some more PayPal shout-outs this week. You can make a PayPal donation on thesolomonster.com. That's where the donation box is. $10 or more, you get a wrestling nickname. Got a lot of people take me up on that offer. We have a few more this week. Want to say thank you to Anthony Razor's Edge, Prince the Lethal Weapon Walker, and Doomsday Donde Page, who's been a longtime fan of the podcast. So thank you to all three of you guys. Really appreciate it. And again, the place to go for any donations is thesolomonster.com. I want to also thank Graham from WrestleRant Radio for inviting me on as a guest this past Tuesday. That was a lot of fun. I'll be appearing live tonight at 7 Eastern on the OTRS Central podcast, the Off the Ropes show. If you want to ask questions, I'll be on live for the first hour and 15 minutes or so, starting at 7 Eastern. So you can call in 646-787-8342. Again, that's the OTRS Central podcast. I'll have all the information up on my Twitter, but if you're listening to this here on Sunday, I know many of you won't be, but if you are, I will be live on that show this evening, and I'm sure for those of you who are listening late, it's probably up in the archives. You could check it out. So if you want to ask questions, that's the number, 646-787-8342. Want to talk a little bit here about the new countdown show they have up on the WWE Network, because again, I said from time to time I'll chime in with my thoughts on certain shows I see on the network, and they have this series called WWE Countdown. They've had a bunch of episodes so far. I have not watched many of them. A lot of them are, you know, top 10 catchphrases and stuff like that, as voted on by the fans. So they have a new one up called Biggest Blunders that look kind of interesting. It almost looked like their version of Wrestle Crap, in a way, kind of counting down the top 10 blunders in wrestling history. And so they were ranking them in order from 10 to 1, from 1 being, of course, the biggest blunder of all, as voted on by the fans. So the list included a whole bunch of, I mean, they had Psycho Sid had his own number. I think he was number 10 on the list, and just Sid constantly botching his promos and stuff. And boy, there were a lot of promos back in his day that Sid botched, but I wouldn't exactly call Sid the worst promo of all time. To me, Psycho Sid's one of the best promos of all time. He was always entertaining, but he made the list. Scott Steiner and his Steiner Phonics made the list. The Dungeon of Doom was on there, the Kennel from Hell match between Al Snow and the Big Boss Man, the Beware of Dog pay-per-view with the blackout, where most of the matches didn't even air. We had the hiring of Mike Adamley was on the list, Papa Shango's Voodoo Curse on the Ultimate Warrior, the Brawl for All back in 1998, which was just a disaster. I mean, everybody got hurt in that tournament. Dr. Death, he got knocked out. His career was short-lived in WWE because of it. Bark Gunn won the whole thing. You figure at least they can make a star out of him. And they dropped the ball on that one, too. So the Brawl for All was on there. And the Shockmaster. You can't have a biggest blunders list without the Shockmaster being on there somewhere. I thought Shockmaster would be number one. Shockmaster came in at number two. And the number one pick for biggest blunder in wrestling history was Mr. McMahon's $1 million giveaway. Now, if you want to look at it from the perspective of, well, it was a blunder because Vince gave away, didn't he give away like a few million? Was it 1 million or a few million? He gave away a bunch of money. And he gave away a bunch of money because he was looking for TV ratings. He admitted it on the special. It was done as a ratings ploy, and I don't have the numbers in front of me. I mean, it's possible maybe ratings for some of the shows were up. I don't think Raw's ratings really drifted up or down that much because of this stupid contest. So in that respect, he probably gave away a bunch of money for nothing. I guess you could call it a blunder. But they're showing footage of this. And let me just say this. McMahon's million-dollar giveaway as the number one blunder in wrestling history. You talk about a lame choice for number one on a list like this. You know, and what makes the whole thing worse, the whole punchline was Vince McMahon dialing a fan on the phone. And Vince McMahon dialing was something to behold. Okay, one keystroke at a time on the number pad. So they're showing this, and the whole punchline was that he got Rickrolled live on the air, okay, while being completely oblivious to it, because believe me, I'm sure Vince McMahon had never heard of what a Rickroll was a day in his life. He probably thought it was something that farmers used back in the 1800s, okay? So that was the whole punchline. He called this guy. This guy had his phone set up where it took you to a message, I guess, while it was dialing, so you didn't hear it dialing. Instead, you heard Rick Astley singing Never Gonna Give You Up. And everybody knew what was going on except Vince McMahon. It was an awesome moment. It was the only redeeming moment, I think, of that whole contest, was when he got Rickrolled. But I guess because they don't have the rights to the music, they showed the footage, but they dubbed over it with some generic 80s rock theme. That's awful. That is terrible. That was the whole punchline. And they dubbed the music over. And they say the fans voted that as number one. That's what they claim. They claim everything on the show. It's all about fan voting. I've never been polled. I don't know who they're polling here, but they claim it's all fan vote. Which, if that's true, the fans are idiots. Because I don't know how you can call that the number one biggest blunder in wrestling history. But it's a fun show. If you want to check it out, it's one of those kind of fluff series that I didn't really think much of. If they do more shows like this, I'll check it out. Even though number one on this list was completely stupid, you know, I did find it entertaining. And they had a lot of pretty funny stuff on there, especially the Scott Steiner and the Sid stuff. Like I said, Sid was something else on the microphone. But I wouldn't call him one of the worst promos in wrestling history, because, again, he was so damn entertaining. The other thing I liked about Sid, though, and I think part of the reason why I liked his promos, even when they made no sense and he came off as just being completely batshit crazy, Sid is one of the most intense promo guys I have ever seen in the history of wrestling. The Ultimate Warrior, I guess, was on a different level in terms of his intensity. But when you watch a Sid promo, you know, at times he could be very quiet and very calm. Most of the time, he was anything but. He was so energetic, like so intense when he would be on the microphone, just shouting and screaming and spitting and just sweat and shit flying all over the place. And they'd get a close-up of his face, and he looked like a madman. And I like that. I think that's something that's actually missing in wrestling now. I try to think, like, who would be the most intense wrestling promo these days in one of the major promotions? Unlike WWE, TNA. I mean, the Briscoes do some pretty good stuff in Ring of Honor. But, you know, like in WWE, an intense promo, nobody really jumps out at me. I mean, there's some good promos, you know, the Shield, somebody like Dean Ambrose, Bray Wyatt. Wyatt's more like a Jake the Snake type, though, where he tends to speak very low and very soft and, you know, makes you work that much harder to pay attention to what he's saying. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if he spent a lot of time watching old Jake the Snake promos to kind of shape his own style. But, like, really intense and pumped up, nobody really jumps out at me in WWE. I can't really think of anybody like that. In TNA, maybe Joe. Samoa Joe might be the closest thing. I know a lot of you guys are really liking the Legends Roundtables that have popped up on the network. I've seen all of them already because they were airing these back when they had the Classics on Demand channel that a lot of you guys didn't have access to. Now you do for the first time. So those are really cool. I know you guys love it, and they're going to be doing a live Legends Roundtable from WrestleMania this weekend. They're filming it, I think, at Access on Friday, this Friday, April 4th. I don't know when. I don't have a time. But supposedly that is the day they're going to record it, I think. Is it Michael Cole? I think Michael Cole might be hosting it. And that'll be live from Access. I don't know who the legends are going to be. But if you're into the Legends Roundtables and you like them, then you might want to check that out. on the network. Check out the schedule, and I'm sure at some point during the week they'll have that up as far as when it may air. Let's talk about Raw from this past Monday night. Raw was live from a place I am very familiar with, Brooklyn, New York. Great crowd in Brooklyn. Really great crowd. Brooklyn made me very proud on Monday, even though I was not there. No Daniel Bryan on the show. They held him out to sell the beating from Triple H the week before, which I liked. You know, he should sell that beating. He got killed. Triple H killed him. He did, I mean, he threw him into barricades. And this is all handcuffed, mind you. Dropped him on the back of his head on the table. He pedigreed him. He supposedly hit him in the head with a chair. All these things. Bryan was just left in tatters on the ground. He should at least sell the beating for 1 week. So I'm sure the people who were in the Barclays Center were not very happy. That's probably why a lot of people were upset coming out of the show. I have no complaints, though, because I thought it was appropriate. You know, back in the day, a beating like that, the guy would be gone for a month. So at least give him a week. I did have friends who went who were pissed he didn't at least come out for the post-show dark match that he was advertised for. But, you know, like I said, I wasn't there, so I had no problem with it. Let's go through some of the key segments here. Stephanie, Orton, and Batista opened the show. And one thing that struck me, and this has been the case in every single Batista segment where he has come down to the ring and he has shared a ring with Randy Orton. There's been a lot of those segments. I cannot believe how much bigger than Batista Randy Orton looks when he's in there next to him. I mean, Orton's a tall guy, and maybe Orton was always a little bit taller than Batista. I'm not just talking about height. I'm talking about height. I'm talking about overall size. I mean, I know Batista's not quite as big as he used to be, but boy, when he's in there with Orton, when he's in there with almost anybody, when he was in there with Triple H a week ago, who isn't even an active full-time wrestler anymore, Batista just looks so small, like somebody put him in the dryer or something. And I couldn't believe how small Arnold Schwarzenegger looked either. I mean, I guess you shrink as you get older. I mean, Batista's a lot younger than Arnold, though, so I don't think that really explains it. But Batista got Stephanie all upset here by saying that she's used to getting drooled on a lot. I know I haven't given it the proper context, so that sounds very weird. But I think what he was getting at was basically Orton kisses up to the authority a lot and is hence drooling all over the McMahons. And so Stephanie didn't take very kindly to that. She smacked the douche glasses right off Dave's face. Orton started laughing hysterically. Ate a spear for doing so. Somewhere in here, I think it was on the spear, Batista split his pants. So as he posed with both title belts, you know, he's standing there, and part of his ass is basically hanging out of his skinny jeans. It was bound to happen. We've all been talking about the skinny jeans ever since he came back. I said just last week, I was impressed that he didn't split his pants when he did the Batista bomb. This time, he wasn't so lucky. I think he finally learned his lesson, though, because on SmackDown, he came out wearing a loose pair of cargo pants. We almost learned from our mistakes. Yes, Batista in cargo pants. It's better than skinny jeans, I guess. Christian won a fatal four-way over Dolph Ziggler, Sheamus, and Alberto Del Jabo to earn a shot at Big E's Intercontinental title the next night on Main Event, which ended up not happening because Christian got concussed during this match. So they had a three-way on Main Event instead with the three losers of this match. Dolph Ziggler won that match. He got the shot at Big E. He lost, of course. But that three-way on Main Event is worth going out of your way to see on the network. It was really, really good between Ziggler, Sheamus, and Del Jabo. So if you missed it, you might want to go check that out. This match was really good, too. You know, just Christian is, I mean, poor Christian. What can you say? You know, the guy can't catch a break. He just seems to be falling apart these days. I get the sense he doesn't have much time left, which is why, you know, look, I did that column on Layfield Report a couple weeks ago about how he is the most underappreciated guy in the roster, at least when he's not hurt. I hope if this is it for Christian, if this year is the final year for him, and I think his contract is coming due in a few months, so I have a feeling this is it for Christian as an active full-time performer. You know, he could still do part-time stuff, I guess, but I could see him maybe as a trainer or in some other role in the company. If this is it for him, hopefully he gets a nice little send-off and doesn't just get hurt and fade off into obscurity. Sin Cara had Scooby-Doo in his corner. or somebody in a Scooby-Doo costume, I should say. He pinned Damian Sandow in like a minute. I have to talk about this. What a joke this was. Scooby-Doo got more cheers on the show than poor Damian Sandow. And I look at Sandow, and it, you know, I thought that hard-fought loss to John Cena all those months ago might do the guy some good. Maybe I was one of the naive ones, because I sure as hell had a lot of you guys who listened to this podcast right into me after that, just thrashing me and saying, oh, have you learned nothing? This is John Cena. All the John Cena haters who blindly hate Cena wrote into me, and I hate to give those guys credit, but you know what? They were right, and I'm not saying that has anything to do with John Cena. I'm not blaming Cena. I just naively thought that coming out of that loss, I think he had two matches where he lost to Cena, but Sandow looked good. They were good matches. And I thought he might get a little something out of it, get a little rub out of it. Maybe they would do something with him. It's done about as much good for Sandow as Dolph Ziggler's win did for him when he beat John Cena at TLC in that ladder match a couple years ago. Sandow, I mean, you hear about Dolph rubbing people the wrong way on interviews, how he's so full of himself, or you know, that he said something that upset Randy Orton once, supposedly, and that's why he's in the doghouse, whatever the reason is. Can someone tell me what Damian Sandow did to deserve this? I never hear anything negative about the guy. He's like a model citizen. They've stripped him of his robe. They've stripped him of his cartwheels. They stripped him of everything that made him unique. And they job him out like he's nothing. Just nothing. I feel bad for the guy. I really do. They tell you to make the most of the airtime that you get. And, oh, you gotta do stuff to stand out. That's such a load of horse shit. I get so pissed off when I hear people say that. People who work for WWE now or used to work for WWE. You know, you've gotta take the opportunity when you get it, and you gotta run with the ball. Give me a fucking break. What is this run with the ball bullshit? What can you do? What can you do when every little thing about these shows now are so micromanaged and scripted and regimented? It's not like it used to be. Maybe back then that's how things were. How are you supposed to kind of step outside that box and do your own thing and get noticed now without getting punished? It sucks. Los Matadores pinned Rybacksel after the Shield came down, distracted Curtis Axel. Shield then laid out Ryback with the triple powerbomb after the match. This was such a big win for the Matadors that they immediately fled the ring to the back and were never shown again. Although it should be noted that on Main Event, it was announced that the tag team title match at WrestleMania will now be a fatal four-way match involving the Usos, the Real Americans, Rybacksel, who are allergic to winning, and if you said the Rhodes Brothers, shame on you for making too much sense. No, Los Matadores are getting a tag team title shot at WrestleMania, a team that up until a week or two ago hadn't even been on Raw in months. I forgot they even still worked for the company. The only thing I could think is that they have something planned with Cody and Goldust in the Battle Royal. Some kind of angle, whether it's a breakup or what, I don't know. That's the only thing I could think of that would make sense as far as keeping them out of the tag title match and putting them with 28 other guys in the Battle Royal. Because if not, if they don't have anything planned, if they're just in there to be eliminated, this makes no fucking sense at all. A few months ago, they were one of the hottest acts in the entire company. They were having great matches every week. Goldust was over. People were raving, oh, Goldust looks so awesome. He looks so motivated in there. Look at him flying around the ring. This is awesome. And by proxy, he was helping get his brother over, because Cody was always missing that one thing. He was just kind of there. And I felt like by being in the team with Goldust, as over as Goldust was, it was helping Cody get over a little bit more. And now, it's classic WWE. They get bored with you and they shuffle you off to the side. That makes two teams now in that fatal four-way match that nobody gives a shit about. And you know who it really sucks for? It sucks for the Usos. You guys know, I thought it made sense to hold off on the Usos' big tag title win for WrestleMania. But they decided to go ahead and do it on that Raw in Chicago. They had the hot crowd. And that was a cool moment, don't get me wrong. But I thought that meant that the Usos would go into WrestleMania to defend in like a three-way or a four-way against the New Age Outlaws, who are still supposed to get their match, unless that's been dropped. They haven't gotten their rematch yet. The Rhodes Brothers, and then maybe the Shield. I figured the Real Americans were probably going to be against each other or in the Battle Royal, which actually they were supposed to be in the Battle Royal, but plans change. So I figured that was probably the match we were looking at, three or four away, maybe the Shield in there, the Rhodes. And now I see what they've done with this undercard. And I think it makes for a weaker match for the Usos. You know, they would have been better off holding out until WrestleMania to give them their big moment there instead. This, you know, this undercard for WrestleMania is really underwhelming, I have to say. This is one of the most weakly booked undercards for a WrestleMania show ever. I know a lot of you guys feel that way about the entire card, but it's the undercard that really stands out to me as being thrown together at the last minute. They've done a very poor job of putting together a lot of these matches. You know, and for your big 30th WrestleMania, how does that happen? How does something like that happen? Michael Cole interviewed Triple H in the ring. He said nothing of note. He's going to be the WWE champion at the end of WrestleMania. He's not, but that's what he said. We had the Hulk Hogan, Arnold Schwarzenegger, Joe Magnioli, as Hulk Hogan put it. His last name is actually, I don't even know what his last name is. I think it's Manganiello or Manginello. I think it's Manganiello. But he called him Magnioli, like Steel Magnolias or something like that. Arnold, I thought, was great here. He was talking about how big Hulk's muscles were. He said the pecs, the tris, the deltoids, the altoids, the humanoids, the hemorrhoids. It felt like 1986 all over again. Arnold said Andre the Giant was his favorite wrestler of all times. Andre the Giant was my favorite wrestler of all times. That's what he said.
Who is your daddy and what does he do?
He said this with Hulk Hogan standing right next to him.
But I hope you leave enough room for my fist, because I'm going to ram it into your stomach!
He said Andre even visited him on the set of Conan the Destroyer, which in fact is true. There's even a photo online of Andre with Arnold on the set. Joe Magnioli said some stuff. Crowd didn't want to hear from him. So we had one big circle jerk going on in the ring when whose music should interrupt them? The Miz. I couldn't believe it. The Miz sharing a ring with Hulk Hogan and Arnold Schwarzenegger. Said the guys in the ring only played tough guys on camera, whereas he is a real tough guy. And I have to say, he got me to crack a smile with that one. That was good. That was a good line. He threw a punch at Joe. Joe nailed him in the midsection. Then Arnold threw a back fist that missed by a mile, but people cheered it anyway. And then Hogan got physical for the first time since he came back, threw Miz over the top rope, out to the floor. Realistically, it was more Miz jumping over the top rope and throwing himself out, since Hogan can't do much other than pose at this point, which is good for him. I mean, you know, he's popular enough where that's all he really has to do to get a reaction, is pose. See? The Hulkster and I do share something in common after all. John Cena and Luke Harper had a match. Hell of a match for Luke Harper. He looked great. Polar opposite of the John Cena match with Eric Rowan a few weeks ago, which sucked. There were loud Let's Go Harper chants. Brooklyn loved themselves some Wyatts on this show. He got out of an STF attempt at one point, I think by grabbing Cena's face or biting him or doing something. It was a very unique way of breaking the hold that we haven't seen before in a Cena match. Cena was about to finish off Harper with the AA when the lights went out. And when they came back on, John Cena was all tied up in the ropes with a sheet mask on his face. This got chants of "This is awesome," which it was. We have one more week of TV to go, but right now, I say it's pretty obvious Bray's not winning that match. Maybe I'll change my mind depending on what they do on the go-home show this week, but yeah, he ain't winning that match. We had Naomi's ass and AJ Lee one-on-one for the Divas title. Match never really got going. AJ just grabbed her belt, said the hell with this, and she bailed, got counted out. It really is a mighty fine ass, I have to say.
She got off. Great ass! When I think of asses, woman's ass, something comes out of me.
I know I say that every week, but it bears repeating. So as AJ goes to leave, out comes Vicky Guerrero. I had forgotten that she still worked for the company. Her and Brad Maddox both. Again, why do we have general managers? Please? Somebody? I'm still waiting. I'm waiting on a good answer. So Vicky calls AJ a bitch, which seemed kind of uncalled for. said that at WrestleMania she will defend her title in a Divas Invitational, which is just a fancy way of saying we don't have any fucking idea what to do with these women, so we'll just put them all in one match. And it's going to be against Naomi's ass, Cameron, the Bella Twins, Natalya, Eva Marie, makes her WrestleMania debut, Emma, Oksana, Alicia Fox, Summer Rae, Rosa Mendez, oh god, I hope it's short, Layla, and Tamina. And they didn't explain the rules, if it's going to be gauntlet style or what. I can't imagine all of them are going to be in the ring at the same time, because that would just be a disaster. I could see them having Brie win the title, with Bryan winning the WWE title in the main event. That would give them a nice story for the end of Total Divas when they get married. They're getting married a week after WrestleMania. The Shield against the Real Americans. Fucking great match. Just, the Shield are total baby faces now. I'm in favor of any angle that keeps those three together. They're just too awesome to break up. They could easily get another 6 months out of these guys as renegade baby faces. Did I mention I love this match? Because I did. Rollins won with the peace of mind on Jack Swagger. That's what they were calling his curb stomp on this show. I say that because on SmackDown, I saw part of SmackDown. I saw the Shield stuff on SmackDown. Didn't hear them use peace of mind. Maybe I missed it. But on Raw, that's what they were calling the curb stomp. After the match, Roman Reigns dropped Cesaro with a Superman punch. And they powerbombed him through the announce table. Total chaos. This was the building where the Shield first made a statement in their very first match against Ryback and Team Hell No at the TLC pay-per-view in 2012. So the Brooklyn fans love the Shield. Kane and the New Age Outlaws walked out on stage, announced that the three of them would fight the Shield at WrestleMania. Look, it's a Shield six-man, so how can I protest that? But still, this all feels very thrown together at the last minute for me. We had the Hall of Fame announcement that not Scott Hall, but Razor Ramon being inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame, class of 2014, well-deserved induction. Some people think the Razor Ramon character is not Hall of Fame worthy. The Razor Ramon character, to me, is very Hall of Fame worthy, considering that they have people in the Hall of Fame who never held championships before, never even did much in WWE. They did a lot of stuff elsewhere, not WWE. So how can you say that Razor Ramon, a character that at one time was a headliner, you know, for much of his run, he was just beneath that level. But when he first came in, you know, some people may not really remember this, but when he first came in, it was very soon after that he was headlining pay-per-views. He was headlining Survivor Series, teaming with Ric Flair against Randy Savage and Mr. Perfect. I know it wasn't the last match on the show, but that was still the real featured main event. He went on to the Royal Rumble the very next pay-per-view to wrestle Bret Hart for the WWE Championship. So, initially in his run, he was much bigger than your average guy who would debut 1 week on Superstars and get a nice little mid-card run. And then he went on, you know, the fans started warming to him, they turned him babyface, he won the Intercontinental title the first time, he ended up winning the title four times. The first guy to hold the Intercontinental belt that many times. Now, it means nothing. I mean, you know, everybody holds every championship so many times, that doesn't mean what it meant 15, 20 years ago. You know, Chris Jericho's like a 9-time Intercontinental Champion. But back then, when you would 3-peat or you would 4-peat, that meant something. You know, it still had some meaning to it. And he was one of the harder push guys during his run in WWE. Now, true, business during that period wasn't exactly hot. You know, you could say, well, he was pushed as an upper mid-card guy at a time when business was really, you know, in the dumps. That's true. But he accomplished a lot during his run. You know, he had that ladder match at WrestleMania with Shawn Michaels, the second ladder match, which in some ways I think is better than the first one. So I have no problem with the idea that the Razor Ramon character is Hall of Fame worthy. I just think it's weird for them to not acknowledge any of his NWO run. Just put him in as Scott Hall and to not acknowledge any of his NWO run. You know, and yes, I know they're probably saving it for another Hall of Fame induction later on, as part of the Outsiders, or as part of the NWO. You know, maybe they'll do it in 2 years. You know, 1996 is when the NWO was born. Maybe they're going to wait until 2016, 20-year anniversary, and put in the NWO as a faction. Okay, I had a million people write in to tell me that they're only saving him for the NWO. It makes total sense. It's fine. You know, they're going to put him in again. Look, I know. Okay, I know. That doesn't make it any less goofy. It's like, If Sean Waltman does the induction, are they going to refer to him as the 1-2-3 kid? I mean, is the 1-2-3 kid going to be the one to induct Razor Ramon into the Hall of Fame? Because Razor Ramon helped make the 1-2-3 kid, not Sean Waltman. So when he gets up there, they should call him the 1-2-3 kid. Or if Nash does the induction, it should be Diesel up there doing the induction, not Kevin Nash. Kevin Nash inducting Razor Ramon makes no sense. Happy to see the guy going into the Hall of Fame. Not a big fan of them putting characters in the Hall of Fame. You know, it's just, if you're going to put the guy in, put the guy in. Scott Hall, you know, for his whole body of work. The guy was part of one of the biggest angles in wrestling history. It sparked the Monday Night War. It sparked this whole big boom period for wrestling. He was as much a part of that as anybody. So it's kind of silly not to acknowledge that. And maybe he'll go off script and he'll talk about it at the Hall of Fame, or maybe he won't, but I don't know. It just seems kind of goofy to me. But that makes two Hall of Fame inductions this year that never would have happened were it not for the intervention of Diamond Dallas Page. I say, you know, forget his three WCW titles. I think DDP deserves a Hall of Fame induction for that alone. Batista versus Randy Orton is the main event for the Go Home Raw show this Monday. And just think, had fans reacted differently to Big Dave's comeback, that would have been our WrestleMania main event this year. And instead, we get it for free on TV 6 days early. So we had the main event segment, which was Brock Lesnar and Paul Heyman coming out to confront The Undertaker, which ended in another beatdown of Brock Lesnar. Brock got sent over the top rope on top of the casket, because there was a casket at ringside. Undertaker popped up out of it. They had the Druids come out to bring the casket to the ring. And I mean, Heyman and Lesnar stalled for about 6 weeks, I think, before they finally opened the casket. Nobody was inside. And Undertaker, through his trickery, you know, he ended up being in the casket again later on. He did his little zombie sit-up. He came in the ring. He showed some fire, threw some punches at Brock. So Brock got sent over the top rope, on top of the casket, almost broke his neck. Not the first time that's happened since he came back. There's one more week to go. But this is the match that I have been most disappointed in. As underwhelming as the undercard has been as a whole, here, this is one of the main events. And out of every individual match, this is the one that I'm most disappointed in. The main event situation, they worked out by adding the stipulation that either Bryan or Triple H will be added to the main event, I think is really good. John Cena versus Bray Wyatt, I'm digging the build. But this has been a massive letdown. And I think a lot of that has to do with them going with the whole dead man, supernatural Undertaker instead of some kind of hybrid dead man, you know, big evil badass character for the guy. There was a huge buzz when he showed up at that UFC show 3 years ago and Brock walked right by him. Okay, Brock had just gotten his ass kicked. He lost his fight. Undertaker was there to watch his fight live. Michelle McCool was with him. And Brock is exiting the cage. The show is over. Undertaker's there being interviewed by Ariel Helwani. Everyone's seen the clip. The clip went viral. Millions of hits. Brock never said a word. He walked right by The Undertaker. And The Undertaker's like, oh, you want to do it? You want to do it? That was it. And he was hoping to get a match with Brock at WrestleMania that year. But I remember there being such a big buzz around that. It was literally 5 seconds of Brock and him staring at each other. And Taker saying that, and look, Brock wanted to do the match. Undertaker, Vince McMahon wanted to do the match. Dana White wouldn't let him do it because he was under contract still with the UFC. If he had let Brock do the match, you think it would have been Undertaker popping up out of caskets and druids and hoods as the build-up to that match? Of course not. It would have been Brock, this is my yard, you think you're big and tough, coming from that world, you can't end the streak. You're going to rest in peace. And then they could have had some, you know, pull-apart brawls, and it would have been huge. It would have been huge. Now, you know, Brock's been out of UFC for a while. The luster really isn't there anymore, like when he first came back. I love Brock. I think he's a great character. He still feels special, largely because he only wrestles 3 times a year. Most of the time he's not on television. I guarantee you if Brock Lesnar was on television every week with the writing on this show, he would have been ruined a long time ago. So he's still special, but he doesn't have that outside appeal that he had. He doesn't have that box office appeal, I guess, that he had initially when he first came back. That's long gone now. But they still could have built this up as a fight, and they didn't do that. And I think that's hurt the match. Now, maybe it was done that way because Undertaker's too old, and he's too fragile, and they don't think he could handle it. I mean, it's been totally one-sided in the build-up so far. Even if they're afraid he's going to get hurt, and they don't want Brock to lay him out on TV, they still could have done the build-up differently, but, you know, it's the same Lord of Darkness, smoke and souls stuff that we've seen before. Brock's different. You know, they probably should have tried to make this more real and maybe play off their history together. Undertaker has never beaten Brock Lesnar in a match on pay-per-view. They've had three of them. But as we saw with the Undertaker-Triple H match at WrestleMania 27, they don't want to acknowledge that period from 2000 to 2003 where Undertaker wasn't the dead man. You know, on DVDs, on the network, that stuff is all there, but they're not going to go ahead in their build-up on television and put footage on television that shows the Undertaker being anything but the Undertaker that we see now. It's like it never happened. So the match may end up being awesome. I'm not saying it's going to be a crap match. As a matter of fact, I think this match could be one of the best matches on the entire show. Because I think Brock's going to go in there, and Brock's going to bump around for this guy like it's nobody's business, because Brock's actually very good at that. And Undertaker, you know, say what you want about the Undertaker, I think when it's go time, he'll deliver. So I think they could have a very good match. But I have not been feeling this build-up at all. Aside from them playing off Undertaker's age, which I think is smart, and it makes sense, that I like, but I think this should have been built up more as a fight, and more of a personal issue between these two guys, instead of the same old Undertaker, let me come out and work my magic, and Brock can act scared, and he can, you know, take some bumps, and that's really all there is to it. There really isn't much to this match. So Undertaker's going to deliver his final address to Brock Lesnar on the Go Home show this Monday. I don't know what else there is for him to say. He's kicked his ass every single time they've been in the ring together. I mean, maybe he'll come out and say, listen, for your own good, you may as well just stay home and forfeit the match. Because it's not like Brock stands a chance at WrestleMania anyway. Two more items here before we move on to the NXT review. Prince Devitt. I mentioned his name several weeks ago on the show. There were rumors that he was entertaining an offer from WWE. And now comes the news that his match at the New Japan show at Sumo Hall on WrestleMania Sunday, April 6th, is going to be a loser leaves town match against his opponent. And it doesn't mean anything, doesn't confirm anything 100%, but it certainly makes one wonder if that may be it for him in New Japan. And if it is, I think it's safe to say he's probably on his way to WWE. So we'll know in about a week or so. And the coach, Jonathan Coachman, former WWE announcer in the news, he posted a very interesting tweet earlier this week mentioning that he was going to have a cool announcement for WWE fans in the next month or so regarding something happening in the summertime. And the belief is that Coach has reached a deal with WWE to work with them again, where he would still do his job full-time at ESPN. He's not leaving ESPN to come back to WWE like that. He'll keep doing that, but it sounds like he may be doing stuff like in-studio wraparounds, like news updates on the network, and maybe hosting a live kind of a studio talk show on the network this summer, which is very interesting because I had a conversation with Scott Stanford, who works for WWE as an announcer. He's also an actual newsman, for those of you who don't know, here in New York. He used to be on Channel 4 as their sports anchor. He now is a news anchor on Channel 11 here in New York City. And ran into him actually at a work event with a client last year at NBC, and we talked about wrestling for a while. Really cool guy, very down to earth. But one of the things we talked about that he mentioned is with this new network, and I said, you know, are you going to be doing more things for the network? I'm surprised they don't kind of use you more in that capacity. And he had mentioned to me at that time that they were considering doing some kind of a news show that maybe this upcoming summer, it wasn't going to launch right away on the network, but he was, you know, he was hopeful they would do something like that. And that was pretty much confirmed a few weeks ago when they sent out that poll to some of their Fan Nation members, asking them what they would want a show like that to be called. That was the one where they said Livewire was a possible candidate. So I wonder if this is going to be the new, if that name won, this could be the new version of Livewire that has been rumored. And I guess Coach, it looks like, is the one who's going to be hosting it. So I feel kind of bad for Scott Stanford. I don't know if he was up for that or not. But anyway, sounds like the coach is on his way back. And I like the idea of doing a live studio show. I figured they would do something like that at some point, maybe like their version of SportsCenter. It almost sounds like maybe a hybrid mix of a SportsCenter old Bite This show. They used to have the Bite This audio show on WWE.com. They stopped doing it because people were trolling them. People were calling and saying, oh, you know, TNA rules, WWE sucks, which is, I don't think you would get those same people saying that now. And so it looks like they may be taking live calls, tweets, emails, stuff like that. I like that. I like that concept. I think Coach is somebody who would be good in that role. And at the same time, he's still working for ESPN, so it gives WWE some rub from a guy who actually is a legitimate broadcaster. And it would be nice if they actually went the extra mile. If they're going to do something like this, I want to see them cover some real news, too. So let's say somebody gets suspended from WWE. We haven't had a wellness suspension in a while, but when there is one, they'll put something on the website. You know, is that the sort of thing they would cover on a live news show? You know, they would have a news update saying so-and-so was suspended for violating WWE's wellness policy. He's suspended for 30 days or 60 days. Like, if they want to bring some legitimacy to this, and I think bring in some people who probably think, ah, it's just a bunch of kayfabe crap, why am I going to waste my time on that? They have to make it more legit in that way. I hope they do. I hope that's the direction they take with it. Obviously, it's still WWE propaganda, but maybe they'll try to make it more of a real show like that. I don't know. I'm very curious to see what approach they take with it. This week's episode of NXT was a special vengeance episode. Lots of rivalries being resolved and rematches from the Arrival special. We had Mojo Rawley in the opening match against CJ Parker in one such rematch from Arrival. We had CJ Parker in there doing his heel shtick, but basically he still comes out to his old theme music, his old hippie Titantron. I would think that has to change sometime soon. Mojo won. Rear view, hyperdrive, which is his seated senton, and match is over. Parker goes nuts. He starts ripping out his hair extensions, just yanking out his hair like he's Mankind or something. So not much to it. We had Tyler Breeze beating Xavier Woods. Again, angry Xavier Woods marches down to the ring to the tune of Somebody Call My Mama. Just doesn't really work. Not only is Xavier Woods jobbing to guys on the main roster, he's jobbing to guys on NXT as well. So, you know, first Rusev, now Breeze. It's obvious they only wanted him on TV so they could talk about how much, oh, we have somebody who's has a PhD, or he's going for his PhD, whatever it is. You know, it's so important to them to kind of build up their own reputation by saying on television how we have this smart person on our roster. Look at this guy. He's trying to make a better life for himself. This is the kind of people we recruit here in WWE before we job them out to everybody under the sun. You know, it's like as though that's going to change people's perception of pro wrestling in 2014. The only people watching your show where you're promoting this are wrestling fans. You know, so they could send him out to do, like, these Be a Star rallies, and I guess it sounds all nice when he talks about how he's going for his PhD, or he has one, or, you know, whatever, but anyway, Xavier Woods is not going to do much to change their minds, these people. Either you're a wrestling fan or you're not. Nothing like that's going to change that. So Tyler Breeze wins with the beauty shot, seems to be on course for a title shot against Adrian Neville at some point. They have worked very well together in the past, the matches I've seen with Neville and Breeze, unlike, for example, Neville and Corey Graves, which put me to sleep. So I'm hoping we get to see that match again down the road. Speaking of the boring one, Corey Graves beat Yoshitatsu. Pretty basic squash. Graves tapped him out with Lucky 13. No sign of Sami Zayn. We did get footage of him being checked for a concussion last week after Graves attacked him from behind, but that was it. And we learned later on that they will have a match on NXT this week, which I don't know that I'm going to have a chance to see that, so I may have to watch that after the fact because I'm not going to be around. Natalya, with Brett the Hitman Hart in her corner, beat Charlotte, who had Sasha Banks in her corner. Beat Charlotte, I should say, by DQ. Sasha Banks broke up the sharpshooter. Brett was a guest analyst for the Arrival special last month. These shows were taped the day after, I think, so that's why he was there. He's not her permanent manager. He didn't look very good at all, if I'm being honest here. I mean, apparently he had a broken foot that he was dealing with that he didn't even know he had. I think Brett did an interview and said he's had a broken foot for like 2 years and only was recently diagnosed with it. So I'm sure that probably accounted for why he was limping around and not moving around very well. But he just looks so much older now. He doesn't care. He doesn't color his hair. His hair's all gray. He just looks very old, you know, and didn't do much during the match. He got animated a couple of times, but otherwise just kind of leaned on the apron. He was just kind of there. It's funny how many times we've seen Brett with Natty either on Raw or on NXT, and not one time have we seen her with her father, you know, Jim the Anvil Neidhart. They do mention the fact that she is his daughter. It's not like they hide that or they ignore it. I just have never seen Natty with her father on the show before, on Raw, SmackDown, pay-per-view. So I think that says a lot about the state of Jim Neidhart these days. But this was a good match. Lots of aggression out of Natty, but Charlotte looked good too. I think she's coming along nicely. I still don't think she's ready for a title shot against Paige, which I think is the match they've been building up to. It looks like she's still being groomed as the challenger for the championship, so I feel that's coming a little too soon. But, you know, she's a good athlete, and she's coming along. I'm sure in time she'll be a lot better, because how can she not be? She's the daughter of Ric Flair. But then again, I guess people probably said the same thing about David Flair, so that doesn't really mean much. But, you know, Charlotte's already a much better athlete than her brother, so she's already well on her way. Main event was Adrian Neville defending his NXT title in a rematch against the former champ Bo Dallas. I enjoyed this match more than I did their ladder match at Arrival. I thought this was great. The crowd got into it, which was no easy task because they were dead for most of this show because it was probably the fourth show out of four at the tapings. And the crowd, you can't keep up that same crowd energy for all four shows. I mean, we've seen that with TNA before when they do those double tapings. That second show, usually the crowd is just completely dead. They got to pipe in crowd noise. That's just how it is. But Neville always looks good, but this may have been the best Bo Dallas match I've seen since I've started watching NXT. Neville's so small, he can sell really well for bigger guys, and pretty much everybody you put him in the ring with is going to be bigger than him. There were two lariats in particular during this match that Dallas gave him, one on the outside, one on the inside, where he turned the dude inside out. It looked awesome. Neville goes to land his red arrow off the top rope, but Dallas got his knees up. It was a great near fall there. I thought for sure we were getting a title change. They had me convinced. And crowd was really into it at this point. Neville ends up nailing Dallas with a super kick. And when I say he nailed him with a super kick, he demolished him with a super kick to the face. So Dallas is down in the corner. A little too close to the ropes for a red arrow, so I'm thinking, okay, what's this guy going to do? Because he's not going to do the red arrow, at least I hope not, because Dallas is way too close to the corner. And what he does here, he proceeds to pull off what I can only describe as like an inverted 450 splash. It's probably the best way I can describe it. I don't even know. It was incredible. It was an incredible move. The man is unreal when it comes to the high-flying stuff. If only they had let the original Sin Cara be Sin Cara without limiting the moves that he could do, maybe things would have turned out differently for that guy. If they let Neville showcase what makes him special once he makes it to TV, he can be a star. He could be a big star. Now, are they going to limit him the way they limited Sin Cara and other guys? Well, I guess we'll find out, but I still think he's going to be limited no matter what by his size. He's very, very small, but nobody on that roster right now can touch this guy in the ring when it comes to the aerial offense. He's awesome. So, great finish to a really good match. Thumbs up. Good main event. Nice rebound. Some of the more recent weeks of NXT have been kind of ho-hum, but this was a really, really good match. And like I said before, next week, Sami Zayn one-on-one with Corey Graves. There probably won't be an NXT review on next week's Sound Off unless down in New Orleans, we have a chance to watch NXT on the network at the house, you know, we're staying at or something. I think NXT probably won't be the first thing on our minds. So just an FYI, wanted to mention that there may not be another review for another 2 weeks here on the show. Let's take a quick break here, talk a little bit about Audible, and when we come back, we will get into the Impact review right after this. Check this out, guys. For you, the listeners of the Sound Off, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial so that you can check out their service. And it's a quality service. I wouldn't be mentioning it on my show if it wasn't. They have a bunch of wrestling books to choose from in audio form, including Lex Luger's book, Dusty Rhodes' book, Hulk Hogan's book is available with narration from the Hulkster himself. There's even one that chronicles the rise of the late Junkyard Dog in Mid-South, which sounds really interesting. You can choose any one of those free by trying audible.com. If you commute to work, or if you like listening to things other than music at the gym, I know a lot of people listen to this podcast that way. It seems to me an audiobook would absolutely make sense. To get one, make sure you go to audibletrial.com/Solomonster. It's another way to show your support for the Sound Off, and you get something free in return. Can't beat that. Again, that's audibletrial.com/Solomonster. Time for the Impact Report. Impact on Thursday night was a show that essentially was built around some really good wrestling and some really, really unfunny silliness involving Willow. You know, I'm not the biggest fan of the Willow character or what they've done with it so far. And they had segments that were littered throughout the entire show, pre-tapes, I presume in the woods of Cameron, North Carolina, but they were in the woods somewhere. EC3 and Rockstar Spud. So Rockstar Spud, who had his ankle broken by Willow, 2 weeks ago on TV, he's back on television, hobbling around. At least they acknowledge his leg is hurt. They're not just ignoring it. But he's back. He was all decked out in camouflage, looking like a giant bush, I guess, and maybe a not-so-giant bush. And the whole climax of this was, they find a barn, and EC3 goes into the barn, and Rockstar Spud is saying, "Don't do it! Don't go into the barn!" And he does anyway, and while EC3 is in the barn with his back turned, we hear, you know, we see Willow. This is all very slickly produced, like it's like a movie. And Willow kidnaps Rockstar Spud, and so EC3 doesn't know what happened to Rockstar Spud. They come back to another segment later. He sees an abandoned house, and he goes into the house, and he's looking for Willow, and where is Spud, and where are you guys? And he sees Spud tied up on a bed, and then Willow attacks from behind. He attacks EC3 with an umbrella. He beats him down with an umbrella, and then he shrieks, he laughs, he disappears. This sucks. This sucks. Willow is one of the more awful characters, I think, in the history of TNA. And I know it's a Jeff Hardy original. It's not a TNA character so much as it's a Jeff Hardy creation. It goes back to the Omega days when he was probably tripping on acid and God knows what else the guy was doing when he came up with this character. Maybe he watched Mary Poppins or something like that, Alice in Wonderland, and said, "Hey, I have a good idea for a wrestling character." Well, it may have seemed like a good idea at the time. It may have been an interesting character maybe to help get him over, although he never did portray it on a major league level until now. But there's a difference between being, you know, Willow the Wisp in Omega 20 years ago and being Willow when, as Jeff Hardy, you were one of the more popular stars in all of wrestling. And I know Jeff hasn't been as popular as he was a few years ago when he had his peak. But he's still one of the biggest names in wrestling, and he's easily one of the biggest names on the entire TNA roster and one of the biggest babyfaces. And now he's masquerading around as this character on television because, I mean, are we all supposed to think that he's just gone mad? He's like the Mad Hatter. He's gone insane. I mean, what are we supposed to think here? And quite frankly, I don't care what we're supposed to think. It's just dumb. And what made it worse is they had a really, really good main event. I know I'm skipping around here, but they had a really good main event. It was the the James Storm Gunner grudge match. Remember last week, James Storm broke a beer bottle over Gunner's dad's head, knocked him out, killed him dead. His dad sold it well, Gunner not so much. But I like that they've built this really heated personal thing between the two of them. They aired these vignettes throughout the show that go, you know, it goes to the whole history of them as a tag team and Gunner getting the briefcase. And by the way, what the hell ever happened to that tag team title shot that was in the other briefcase? I mean, are we just supposed to forget about that? That was never explained. So the match that they had on this show, essentially it was just a glorified hardcore match. Lots of tables and chairs and weapons and garbage cans. There was one sequence during this match, and it kind of hit me because now, you know, WWE and TNA to a large extent will shy away from shots to the head with weapons. You know, we don't see chair shots to the head and stuff like that. And I know the garbage cans they use are so flimsy, but they had this one spot where I mean, these guys were bashing each other in the head with garbage can lids, just smacking themselves in the skulls with the garbage can lid. And it sounded great, but I couldn't get into it. It was just like, why do you got to hit each other in the head with these fucking garbage can lids? Like, it's not 1996. You don't have to bash each other's brains in with a garbage can lid. So it was the first time I really watched something like that, and I thought, this kind of bothers me. You know, I didn't think I'd feel that way because it's not the same thing as a steel chair. I just thought it was unnecessary. But aside from that, there was a lot of good stuff in this match, a lot of spots. They went through tables, and there was one spot there where James Storm hit his finish. Actually, he hit both of his finishes. He had the... What was the name of his other move? I know he has the Last Call super kick. Whatever the other move is that he has. It's like the Jericho Codebreaker. And then he gave him not one, but two Last Call super kicks, and Gunnar kicked out. And that's a good way to get the guy over. I mean, you know, you're trying to... Yeah, James Storm is an established guy already. You want to try to get Gunnar over to that next level. And that, I think, was a big... That was a big way of doing that, having Gunnar kick out of all those finishers and just everything that the guy went through in this match. Both these guys took a lot of abuse. In the end, we had Gunnar smashing a beer bottle, how apropos, over James Storm's head. I think he should have just pinned him after that, but he went and picked him up for his finishing move. Didn't look very good. Got the pin. Gunnar gets the big win. He got the redemption he was looking for. This all felt very rushed, given that the angle with the dad just happened. You figured they would want to build this match up a little bit. It looks like they're going to be having a few more pay-per-views this year, but anyway, they blew the match off here. Really, really good match. Would have been a great way to go off the air, but they ended up going off the air with that Willow stupidness. So that's how they ended the show, with Willow. Instead of ending the show with this real feel-good win for... And they did the same shit. If you go back a month or so ago, when they had the casket match between Bully Ray and Mr. Anderson, they did the same crap then, where I remember thinking that it was actually a pretty good match. Anderson looked pretty good. He got Bully in the casket. It was this big culmination of a rivalry between the two of these guys that had been going on for a while. And Anderson got the decisive win. The place went nuts. It was a great way to go off the air. And I think they ended up going to like a Dixie MVP segment in the back. So somebody has to explain to these people the right way and the wrong way to go off the air. They could have gone off the air with some momentum, a nice feel-good moment. And again, they went off the air with some zany, stupid Willow garbage. I'm going to go back through the show here, some other things. I did not watch Impact until half an hour. I finally finished it half an hour before I started recording the show. So I watched Impact very late. Almost didn't get to watch it at all. So I had no notes that I jotted down during the show. I actually pulled up a review that was done on some random website that'll help guide me here so I can remember everything, so just bear with me here. The other key thing on the show was at the beginning of the show, there was a segment of the ring with MVP, Magnus, Abyss, Samoa Joe, and eventually Eric Young came out. And essentially MVP made a match for next week's Impact between Magnus and Abyss, trying to drive a wedge between these two guys. So already, they're building dissension between these two guys. A pairing that's been around for, what, 2 weeks now? 3 weeks max? And they're already teasing dissension. And he said, you know, Magnus, you said that Abyss can't get in the ring unless, you know, you're around. Well, we're gonna go by that. We're gonna go ahead with that. And I'm gonna make a match between the two of you for the World Heavyweight Championship. Which makes total sense, given that the last time we saw MVP out there with Abyss kicked his ass. The director of wrestling operations was laid out by this monster who walks around with a board with nails in it. And now he gets a world title shot. So Samoa Joe is also going to be in the match. It was going to be a three-way. Joe, rightfully not very happy about this, comes out to confront MVP and says, listen, essentially what you've done here, you dick, is you've put me in a handicap match, 2-on-1. These guys are together. It's 2-on-1. And MVP's like, no, I don't see it that way. You know, because MVP's an idiot. So Joe wasn't very happy. Eric Young came out. He went after Abyss. And this was, in a lot of ways, the Eric Young show. Eric Young has been in TNA since day one. And for much of that, Eric Young has been a comedy character. Very rarely has Eric Young been taken seriously. He'll go through these periods where he goes from funny to serious, but I'm willing to bet that if you look at much of his 10 years or 11 years, however long it's been in TNA, he's mostly been a comedy character. Not necessarily at the Santino level, but a comedy character nonetheless. And now they're starting to try to push him as a more serious character. I don't think it's going to work because it's just been too long of comedy goofiness. But I liked what they did with him on the show. They did the best they could because the fans love him. The fans are into him. And, you know, when I reviewed the AJ Styles shoot interview that he did with I think it was High Spots, earlier this year, and you can catch the full review of that DVD up on our YouTube channel because I put it up as a sound off extra. One of the things that AJ Styles brought up during the interview was Eric Young, and in a lot of ways, how criminally underrated and underused Eric Young has been for much of his time in TNA. He said everybody loves Eric Young. The fans love Eric Young, and it's a testament to how much they love the guy because through all the stupid comedy crap, all the stupid gimmicks, this is what AJ said, the guy is still over. And he felt that they could have done more with him, they can be doing more with him, and they just don't. Well, now it seems like, you know, maybe he's the flavor of the week. I don't know. I mean, I've praised TNA recently for doing more with Bobby Roode, Samoa Joe, and Austin Aries. Austin Aries hasn't even been on the TV show now for 2 weeks, so they're doing nothing with him. Roode is at least doing his thing with Bully Ray, and Samoa Joe, for the time being, is still in the title picture. But now it looks like they're at least attempting to do something with Eric Young. He came out there. He was full of fire and energy. He cut this passionate promo that was actually really, really good. So I liked it, but I just don't think people can take him seriously as a world champion or as a world title contender. They're into him, but the idea of Eric Young as the TNA World Heavyweight Champion is a joke. And it's not a reflection on his ability. It's a reflection on how the guy's been booked for 10 years. You can't expect that people are going to look at this guy all of a sudden and say, hey, this guy could be a world champ. He can be. You can put the world title on anybody you want to. You can put the world title on me. Doesn't mean I'm a world champion. You know, I'm world champion material. And I think that's the problem that they're going to find if they want to keep pursuing this. But for one night anyway, I thought Eric Young was really good. He and Joe got into it. There was a lot of fire there. They had a match later on in the show that was actually pretty good. Joe beat him with the choke. He choked him out, but there was some controversy because when he did so, Joe's shoulders were on the mat. Eric Young's were not, even though the referee lifted his arm and it fell limp 3 times. Earl Hebner came out to talk to his son, who was the referee for the match, and said, listen, you know, the guy's shoulders and everything. But nothing happened. You know, the match just ended. But it ended with controversy. And that is a way to build up the title match next week. It's going to be a 4-way match. Magnus, Joe, Eric Young, and Abyss for the TNA World Heavyweight Championship on Impact next Thursday. They also have a match with Bobby Roode and EC3 are going to be tag team partners in a tag team tables match against Bully Ray and Willow. And they're promoting, what's the other match they're promoting? Oh, a straitjacket match. That's the other thing I wanted to talk about. Promoting a straitjacket match between Mr. Anderson and Samuel Shaw. There was a segment on this show where Samuel Shaw went backstage. He found Christy Hemme in a dressing room, and he terrorized her. With the camera right there filming the whole thing, he is terrorizing this poor woman. She's about in tears. Please, leave me alone. She slaps him across the face. He grabs her hair, and he cuts off a lock of hair. And he says, thank you, and he leaves. And when he leaves, I mean, this poor woman she looks traumatized by the whole episode. And sure enough, they cut away from this earlier segment, and there's Mike Tenay on commentary, just commentating like he would for any other lead-in, any other segment. You know, they did mention that he's been suspended by TNA management. Apparently now that he cut the woman's hair, that was enough to suspend the guy. All the shit he's done up to this point wasn't suspension worthy, but this was. And I just hate that when they do a segment like that, they should immediately cut to the announcers and they should show some kind of emotion. They should have cut back to Taz and Mike Tenay, who they don't even cut back to on these taped shows, which probably means they're not at ringside, so they probably can't. But they should have them out there and they should cut to them and have like this look of disgust on their faces for what they just saw. Instead, this woman is in tears. She's been terrorized. They cut to the announcers, and Mike Tenay is like, well, Taz, I guess, you know, Mr. Anderson is going to have a match with Samuel Shaw next week on Impact. Like, it doesn't mean anything. It's like they have no emotion. They're like, androids out there. They can't express emotion like you and I can. So it's hard for us to react to what we just saw when the announcers kind of brush it off almost like it's not a big deal. I said there was a lot of good wrestling on this show, and there was. It wasn't just the Storm Gunner main event. We had the Wolves beating Magnus and Abyss. They beat the world champion. In fact, it was Eddie Edwards who actually maybe tapped out the world champion in this match. And remember, Magnus made it very clear some months back that if he's in a non-title match and somebody locks him in a submission hold, whether it's Joe or the Wolves in this case, he's just going to tap right away because, you know, in theory, it's a smart thing to do. I don't want to put myself in a position where, you know, my title's not on the line. I'm not going to lose it. So why would I want to show pride and not give up if somebody has me locked in a painful submission hold, if somebody's trying to choke me out or if they're trying to break my leg? So that's what he did. He tapped out right away. Abyss was not happy because Abyss was also in that match and he doesn't like to lose. But that was still, you know, a fairly big win, I think, for the Wolves. They beat the world champ. That's got to mean something. So I like that. That was good. We had also the Joe-Eric Young match I mentioned. So those three matches made up much of the good wrestling on this show. So I can't call it a bad show because, you know, we did have some good stuff with that. We also had Angelina Love in a match against Madison Rayne, non-title. And they did the deal where earlier in the show there was a segment where Velvet Sky came out to confront Angelina Love. She was very, very upset with what Angelina did to Madison backstage last week, feigning all this, like, you know, Velvet's not going to stay with Angelina now. There is no Beautiful People reunion. I can't believe you did that. What a bitch. Sure enough, later on, when Angelina's out there for the match with Madison, out comes Velvet Sky, and Velvet is pretending to care about Madison and be there to cheer her on, but in the end, it was all just a swerve, a patented swerve. She gave her a DDT, rolled her in, Angelina got the pin, and the Beautiful People are, in fact, together as heels. So there's your Russo swerve. We had Bully Ray come out for a segment in the middle of the show, has all these people bringing table after table after table to set up around ringside. He calls out Bobby Roode. Bobby Roode comes out. They end up in a brawl. They brawled around ringside for a while, and Bully Ray is the one who really went through some tables. He put his foot through a table trying to kick Roode. Roode moved out of the way, and there was another spot where Bully ran right into a table set up in the corner. The table practically exploded, and at the end of this, I thought Bully looked like an idiot. He's the one who brought out all these tables, and Bobby Roode kind of made him look foolish. So the two of them are going to be part of that tag match next week. Again, it'll be Bully and Willow against Bobby Roode and EC3. We had Nux. Remember last week, we had this very weird segment showing Nux, former Aces and Eights gang member, on the road in a car talking to TNA cameras about his family back home, going back home, trying to reunite with an old flame. So we had segment number two this week. And Nux is talking to a woman that I don't know that it was ever acknowledged who she was. I think we're supposed to think that it's his old girlfriend. And I don't know. It's kind of weird to me. You know, he's back home in a town that was flooded. And so she's showing him around. And the old arcade is all flooded out. All the arcade games are ruined. And Nux can't believe it. Oh, my God, I can't believe this. This was my home. And it was just washed out. And I don't know, for a town that seems like it's in tatters, this woman is all dolled up with the makeup and everything, and you know, she looks pretty good for somebody who's just working at an arcade in town. And she's telling him, you gotta talk to your father. You need to talk to him. Because remember, Nux has not spoken to his old man in 2 years. Nux went off to pursue his dream of being a wrestler, left his family behind. I mean, what an asshole, right? And she says, you got to talk to him. And Nux is like, all right, where's the old man? And she says, he's out there. And that's how the segment ends. It says to be continued. So apparently there's going to be more of these in the weeks to come. I have no idea where this is going. I don't know if the role of Nux's father in these segments is going to be played by, you know, somebody who really isn't his father. He's going to be like a manager for him. Or if this woman is going to come in as his valet. I don't know where this is leading to. Nux is not a character that I find terribly appealing. I'm still not sure why we're supposed to care about this guy. He was part of Aces and Eights. He did everything in his power to bring TNA down, to ruin, to destroy this company, beating people up every week with hammers. if I'm a TNA fan, I'm watching this going, I don't give a fuck about this guy. They still aren't giving me a reason to care about this guy. I think they just like this form of storytelling, putting these segments together. I mean, it is different. It is unique. I just think with this character, it's just not working. They've got to do something to get people to care, and right now it's not working. And that was most of Impact. That was the key stuff I wanted to really touch on. The key really was the dumb Willow stuff, which really was dumb. I like EC3. I even like Spud. I'm not a Willow fan. I know this was meant for comedy. It's still too goofy for me, and it's unbelievable that they have a guy like Jeff Hardy, one of the biggest stars in wrestling in the last 10 years, doing this character on television. It just boggles my mind in a major promotion that they're actually doing something like this. But there is some good wrestling if you are into that, if that's your thing. Joe and EY had a pretty good match. The Wolves against Magnus and Abyss was good. Main event with Gunnar and Storm was very good. If there's one match I'd say to go take a look at, that would be the one. I'm not really a huge fan of like the garbage matches like that, but they made the most of it. They worked really, really hard. And kudos to James Storm, who I think has done a really good job of working with Gunnar and helping get him over as, or trying anyway, to help get him over as a top babyface. And Gunnar got the big win, and the only thing that would have made it better is if they would have gone off the air that way. Time for the mailbag. If you have questions, you can email them to me. TheSolemonster@gmail.com is the place to send any and all correspondence to. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. And you can also send MP3 audio questions, as this person did, Mohammed from Saudi Arabia.
Hey there, Solemonster. Mohammed here. I wanted to ask you about the NWA World Heavyweight Championship and how it was defended in different regions around the world. Do you think that WWE would ever do this concept to its world titles?
I like the idea of a world champion defending in different parts of the world, because that's really, I mean, think about it. That's what a world champion really is. The whole concept of having a world champion is that champion defends all over the world, in different places, in different territories, not just necessarily the same promotion. But it's an outdated concept. It's been outdated for 30 years now. If I'm WWE, I don't want to send my champion off to another part of the world or to another promotion to defend the title, because I need him here, right? I need him here for live events. I need him here for television, for pay-per-views, for promotion. And I don't want him going somewhere else and getting hurt. So do I see WWE doing anything like that? No. And if I'm WWE, I wouldn't do anything like that. There was one thing I forgot to mention at the beginning of the mailbag. I wanted to say, you know, I mentioned the Norwegian wedding taking place in New Orleans this Friday. I mentioned that last week. I want to also congratulate one of our other listeners, Adrian, in Melbourne, Australia. He and his girlfriend of 9 years, Stephanie, are finally tying the knot over WrestleMania weekend. She's a very patient woman, apparently, Stephanie is, and understanding, too. She's agreed to delay their honeymoon for 3 days, since WrestleMania does not air live in Australia until Monday. And in return, Adrian has agreed to not watch any wrestling of any kind for the duration of their 3-week trip. And I certainly hope the sound off is not included in that. See, that's where I would draw the line. You know, she should at least let you listen to the podcast. But anyway, congratulations to the two of them. I just wanted to mention that here. Albert writes in, would it be a good idea for Daniel Bryan to not win the WWE Championship at WrestleMania, since everybody expects it? Should they swerve us and have Bryan win it the next night on Raw or at some other pay-per-view? First of all, not everybody expects it. There are a lot of people out there who don't think Daniel Bryan is walking out of WrestleMania with the title. I expect it, but not everybody does. Second of all, that would be a terrible idea. I hate this idea of swerving people because they know what's going to happen, or they think they know what's going to happen. If it makes sense, then book it that way. They've been jerking Bryan's character around since August. So they're going to have him win the title on Raw instead, or Extreme Rules, because people know what's going to happen. So, you know, we'll surprise them by having Batista go over, or better yet, let's have Randy Orton retain the championship and piss everybody off. But then 24 hours later, we'll give the title to Bryan. So no, I don't think they should swerve anybody. If the plan is for Bryan to win the title, let Bryan win the title. And if the plan is not for Bryan to win the title, then he shouldn't win. I'm not saying Brian has to win. I'm just saying if the plan is for him to win, the idea that they would swerve people because, oh, everybody knows, is the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Great ass!
Dan from Chicago, I was watching ECW One Night Stand from 2005 and noticed during the brawl at the end, JBL was throwing what looked like real punches at the Blue Meanie. Was he throwing real punches? And if so, did he get into any trouble with the company for it? Yes, he was throwing very real punches, as evidenced by Blue Meanie's face being all bloodied up like hamburger meat. Supposedly, JBL did not like Meanie, or at least that's what Meanie says from the first day he came into the company. JBL didn't like him. I don't know what the whole story was, but I know they've made up since then. They're friends now. You watch the footage, and it certainly looked unprovoked to me.
Great ass!
Cole from Philadelphia. I have to say, I'm not excited about Alexander Rusev. What WWE has to realize is that the last person to be over as a monster for a two-year period was Umaga. Since then, there have been guys like the Great Khali, Vladimir Kozlov, and Ryback, who have all been reduced to big jokes. So is it wrong of me to say that as of right now, the monster gimmick is dead. Well, I would say that Brock Lesnar might have something to say about that. Absolutely, it's wrong to say that. Ryback was working. Ryback was over before he lost that Hell in a Cell match to Punk. You know, Rusev is not terrible. I've been watching him on NXT. Maybe you haven't. But I've been watching NXT for almost a year now. So I've seen plenty of Alexander Rusev matches. He's not what I would say an awesome wrestler. He's not the most exciting wrestler, but I remember what he was when he first wrestled, his very first match, until the point that he's at now. He has improved a lot. He's got a certain look that they like. He's a big guy. First thing you say when you look at the guy is, Jesus Christ, that's a big guy. But he's not a big guy that's clumsy, who can't really do much in the ring. He can work. He's not terrible. With a little more experience, I think he can do just fine. You know, the examples that you give, Khali, Kozlov, they were horrible. Kozlov became entertaining as a comedy figure, but as a monster, he sucked. Triple H tried to pull good matches out of both those guys, and he failed. 20 years ago, you might be able to get away with stinking out the joint if you were really big and had a certain look and you were protected. It's a lot harder with crowds now. You know, say what you want to about work rate. Oh, the internet nerds, all they love is work rate. Guess what? Most of the wrestling audience has come to have certain expectations for a wrestler. And of those expectations, they expect that when the guy goes in the ring, he's able to wrestle. He doesn't have to wrestle like Chris Benoit or Kurt Angle or Daniel Bryan, but he has to be able to go. And if you're a big, plodding, fat guy, or a big, tall, plodding guy, and you go in the ring and you can't do shit, they're going to crap all over you. And that's not just the internet fans, that's the general audience. Okay, work rate does mean something. If you're really terrible, people are going to see right through you. So to say the monster gimmick is dead, no, I don't agree with that at all, because with the right monster who can go, he can be very over. He can be a world champion. You just got to find the right person. I don't know if Rusev is the right guy. I'm not saying Rusev is going to be WWE championship material. But what I'm saying is there's going to come a time, whether it's him or somebody else, another big jacked up monster dude who's going to do just fine. The era of the monster in wrestling is far from over.
Great ass!
Eric writes in, do you think a Chris Jericho Undertaker program would have worked in 2008? I'm asking because thanks to the WWE Network, I decided to look back at that year that I got back into wrestling. Jericho was one of the biggest heels in WWE at the time, and you just wanted to see him get his ass kicked. And who better to get the job done than the dead man himself? I personally was never a fan of the idea of doing Jericho Undertaker or WrestleMania, which I assume that's probably what you're talking about as like a WrestleMania match. Jericho, to me, you know, he's great, but I mean, you talk about people not looking at certain opponents of The Undertaker as any sort of threat. I was just talking earlier about how I'm not really buying into this whole build with Brock Lesnar and The Undertaker. I don't think there's anybody out there, though, who would look at the idea of a Brock Lesnar-Undertaker match and think, ugh, come on, you know, it's a mismatch. Brock's a monster, and Undertaker should probably be in there with somebody who's on that same level. You know, Brock is very believable as a badass kind of guy. Chris Jericho is, you know, he doesn't scream badass. And Chris Jericho, to me, is not the kind of guy who could be taken seriously as an opponent for The Undertaker. No offense to Jericho. So I think if you wanted to do a Jericho-Undertaker deal that maybe that builds to a pay-per-view match at like a SummerSlam, yeah, I think that could have worked. As a WrestleMania match, though, I don't think that would have worked at all. They could have gone out there and had a great match, but the build, I can't see myself getting into the build for, you know, the idea that Chris Jericho is going to end the streak. To me, that would have been a complete joke.
Great ass!
Danny Garcia from Bronx, New York. Is it fair or unfair to the fans that SummerSlam is always at the Staples Center in Los Angeles? You've got 11 other pay-per-views during the year that rotate, including WrestleMania. I don't see what's so unfair about it. They keep going back to the Staples Center because they keep selling out the Staples Center. They just sold out all the tickets they put on sale for this year's show, and it's still 5 months away. You know, when they stop selling it out, they'll move someplace else. I'd love to see them try one in the UK, especially with the network now. They can afford to experiment with the different time zones.
Great ass!
Dylan from Long Island, New York. I've been wondering for a while now why WWE does not frequently do non-house shows in Madison Square Garden. The last event that aired there was the Hall of Fame, and before that, I think, was Survivor Series 2011. Is this to keep it more special when they do go there, or is it really expensive to go to the Garden? What's the reason when you consider that they visit Chicago for TV and pay-per-views at least twice a year? It is expense from everything I've heard. I don't know what the exact number would be. And that goes for any event, not just a wrestling show. It's very expensive to run Madison Square Garden for reasons of prestige, I guess. That and you know, the owners are money-grubbing people who want to squeeze every last penny out of everybody who runs at that venue because they know they can. So yeah, it's an issue of expense. That's why WWE's been running more events in Brooklyn at the Barclays Center. They're going to be back there again for Raw in October, on my birthday, as a matter of fact.
Great ass!
Let's get out of New York here, go to a different part of the globe. Nav from Coventry, England, wanted to know what you thought of the Undertaker-Batista feud. I found it very entertaining knowing here are two big stars in the company and you never knew who was going to win in a particular match when both were in the ring, considering both were babyface at the time. Just wanted your thoughts if you felt the same and what you felt of the feud as a whole. I remember liking it. What I remember specifically about that, well, two things. First of all, I remember the WrestleMania 23 match because both guys made a big deal about being very offended and upset that their match wasn't going on last. Those two guys wanted to headline the show in the final match for the World Heavyweight Championship, and instead they were in like the middle of the show, and they gave the main event slot to John Cena and Shawn Michaels, which in a lot of ways was a makeshift match because it was going to be Triple H and John Cena, but Triple H tore his quad. Shawn was his replacement, and they had a very good match, but I remember Undertaker Batista blowing everybody away, because people did not expect that match to be as good as it was. You had two big guys. Batista was never known to be like this great master technician in the ring or anything like that, and he can move around kind of slow, but they had a really, really good match, and the crowd was totally into it, and I know they felt that they stole the show. That's what they said when the match was over. You can make the argument that they did. I can't think of anything else off the top of my head that stole the show at WrestleMania 23. I remember being struck by how impressed I was with the match. It exceeded my expectations, so I guess you could say they did steal the show. The other thing I remember about their feud was Undertaker got hurt. He was still the world champion. He got hurt, and they had a match on SmackDown with him and Batista, and Undertaker's arm was all wrapped up. I think he had like a torn tricep. He had like a major injury, and they had to get the title off him, and he had a cage match on SmackDown with Batista. And I think both of them hit the ground at the same time, or Undertaker just barely hit the ground just barely before Batista's did. So he retained the title. I think they hit at the same time. But they did this angle where Mark Henry came out, beat up the Undertaker, left him for dead, went to go to the back, and that's when Edge's music hit. He came out, cashed in Money in the Bank, won the world title, and from that point on, that was really the... That was kind of the kickoff, I guess, of that rated R superstar era for Edge, because he was able to be the world champion on a brand by himself. He didn't have anybody else, Triple H or anybody else, kind of overshadowing him as the number one guy. He was happy to get off Raw, and he took that brand, and he carried it. He carried that brand on his shoulders, and it almost didn't happen, because Ken Kennedy, you know, Mr. Anderson is the one who won the Money in the Bank briefcase at WrestleMania that year, but then he got hurt. They thought he had a torn tricep or bicep and that he was going to have surgery and take some time off. They did a very rushed match with him and Edge on Raw where Edge beat him quick, beat him for the briefcase. That would have been Kennedy's spot. Kennedy would have been the World Heavyweight Champion, beating The Undertaker there, were it not for him getting hurt, and they thought he had a much more serious injury than he did. It wasn't until a few weeks later or a couple weeks later that they found out it was just like a bad bruise. So imagine how Kennedy must have felt. You know, that could have been... I mean, there are two different opportunities that Kennedy had during his time in WWE where he could have been a big star. And that could have been a real turning point for his career. That was number one. Number two was he was going to be Vince McMahon's bastard son and got suspended, and he fucked up his chance on that one. So him being McMahon's bastard son, I mean, who knows? Who knows where they would have taken that if they didn't go in the comedy direction with Hornswoggle and they took it more seriously. That could have made Kennedy a main eventer had they gone all the way with him, and it just didn't work out.
Great ass!
And finally here, Ian from Dublin, Ireland, who also wants to know when my version of the Irish Rover is hitting iTunes. Soon, Ian, very soon. Anyway, he says, with Memorial Battle Royals being rumored to be taking place for future WrestleManias, do you think starting next year they should try to do a King of the Ring tournament on Raw and SmackDown leading up to WrestleMania and have the finale take place at Mania? The ceremony can take place on Raw the next night. This idea would make Mania more special, and just like Money in the Bank, may lead to King of the Ring as a pay-per-view again. Interesting idea, especially the part about if it's a success, much like Money in the Bank, it could lead to the return of King of the Ring on pay-per-view. I'm not a fan, though. I'll tell you why. I would rather just bring back Money in the Bank as a WrestleMania attraction and have a live King of the Ring special air on the WWE Network. You know, you could have qualifying matches on Raw and SmackDown to build to the full tournament, maybe with a few other matches thrown in as a live special on the network. I mean, I guess it would basically be like a pay-per-view, but I'm thinking of it more as like original content they could put on there and help get somebody new over, make it mean something. The winner gets a shot, let's say, at the WWE World Heavyweight title at the next pay-per-view, or that Monday on a big Raw show, or something along those lines. But I want to see the tournament take place in one night, you know, not broken up over several weeks. That's how they did it from 96 on, and I was never a fan of that format. That's how I would like to see them do it. You got the network now, especially. You need more content. You know, bring it back, do it right, let's see how it goes, and who knows, in the end, maybe he'll get somebody new over. Maybe that's exactly what a guy like a poor Damian Sandow needs. And if Damian Sandow isn't the guy, if there's another guy who you think is money, who needs that extra special something, instead of putting a championship on him, you know, people get titles way too easily these days. Maybe let them win King of the Ring, you know, and then they can get a title shot but fall short, or something along those lines I would like to see them do. But as far as adding it as an attraction to WrestleMania, I'd rather see them bring back Money in the Bank and just keep King of the Ring separate.
History has been made here!
This week in wrestling history, it was 27 years ago this week on March 29, 1987, that WWE hosted WrestleMania III, the Pontiac Silverdome in Pontiac, Michigan. Reported crowd of 93,173. The real crowd believed to be more closer to the 78,000 mark, still very impressive. But even at the 93,173 figure, the funny thing about that is I think 6 months after that show, that record was broken by the Pope, who held mass at the Silverdome. This is the show that's remembered for two matches in particular. Of course, the main one being Hulk Hogan body slamming Andre the Giant, supposedly undefeated for 15 years, except that he really wasn't, to retain the WWE Championship. That iconic moment, that slam, that is the most iconic moment in the history of wrestling. And then Macho Man Randy Savage and Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, their classic match for the Intercontinental title, Steamboat winning the championship, only to lose it a few months later to the Honky Tonk Men. This was also the show where we saw the first real appearance of Brutus the Barber Beefcake. Beefcake had been doing the Dream Team thing with Greg Valentine for a while as a heel. Things didn't work out too well for them on this show, and so this was the first real appearance, I think, of Brutus as the Barber, which would go on to be his gimmick for many more years to come. 26 years ago, this week, on March 27, 1988, WrestleMania 4 took place from Trump Plaza in Atlantic City, New Jersey, the first of two WrestleManias back-to-back to take place at Trump Plaza. This was the tournament to crown a new WWE champion. The title had been vacated after a disputed finish in the Hulk Hogan-Andre the Giant main event match on NBC. Well, actually, Andre beat him. It wasn't so much a case of there being a non-finish. Andre beat him and won the belt, but then tried to give it up to Ted DiBiase. And that's not allowable under the WWE bylaws, I guess, or so decreed President Jack Tunney, who declared the title vacant in a 16-man single elimination tournament. Randy Macho Man Savage beating Butch Reed, Greg Valentine, One Man Gang, and Ted DiBiase all on the same night. And impressively enough, Miss Elizabeth came to the ring four times that night in four different outfits. And she was beautiful in every one of them. Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant collided in a rematch during this tournament that went to a no decision. I think it was actually a double DQ. So both men were eliminated from the tournament. Hogan did come back out at the end of the show because Andre was in DiBiase's corner, so Hogan seconded Macho Man in his corner. And it was a big Mega Powers powwow at the end of this show. Hogan celebrating with Savage, who was the new champion. Hogan had to take some time off. I think he was filming No Holds Barred at the time, which is why Savage got a run with the title, and it was actually a very successful run. Savage did some really big business as the champion in 88. He did a lot of house show matches with Ted DiBiase. So Savage did very well for himself in that 1 year as the champion before they did the split between Hogan and Savage the year after. Up against WrestleMania that very same night was the NWA Clash of the Champions show. That was the Clash of the Champions show where Ric Flair and Sting had their famous match. This is the match that put Sting on the map as a big-time single star. They went to a 45-minute time limit draw, and they had judges. It was like a boxing fight, like an MMA fight. They had judges at ringside to determine who the winner of the match would be. The judges were Gary Juster, Sandy Scott, Jason Hervey, who you may know from the Wonder Years. He's Eric Bischoff's good friend. They're in business now with their Bischoff-Hervey production company. Patty Mullen, who is a former Penthouse Pet of the Month, and Ken Osmond, who played Eddie Haskell in Leave It to Beaver. That's quite the eclectic group of judges at ringside for this match. So the judges, in their infinite wisdom, could not come to a decision on who won, and so therefore Ric Flair retained his NWA World Heavyweight title. But again, a star is made in one night. And to this day, Sting gives Ric Flair a lot of credit for the success he had in his career, and it all goes back to that match that night at the Clash of the Champions. 18 years ago this week, on March 24th, 1996... WCW held its second uncensored pay-per-view, and we had some fun with that one last week on the Sound Off with Hogan and Vader, Hogan and Flair. Well, here, it was Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage against the Alliance to End Hulkamania, which was made up of Ric Flair, who else, Arn Anderson, Lex Luger, Meng, The Barbarian, Kevin Sullivan, Z Gangsta, and The Ultimate Solution. That's eight men, eight against two. I'll give you one guess as to how it ended. Z Gangsta was the man known as Zeus from the movie No Holds Barred, and the Ultimate Solution was played by Jeep Swenson, who was enormous. I can't imagine why his heart gave out on him a year later. He also had a cameo in No Holds Barred and got killed by Zeus, so nice to see they made up. He also played Bane in the Batman and Robin movie. Joel Schumacher, who almost ruined the entire Batman franchise. Anyway, when they initially brought Swenson in for this match, they called him the Final Solution, which was the name Adolf Hitler gave to his plan to exterminate the Jews. So they had to change it to the Ultimate Solution. This was a Tower of Doom steel cage match, and the rules were as follows. It had three floors. Hogan and Savage would have to start at the top floor, where they would be locked in with Ric Flair and Arn Anderson. Different heels were locked in different quadrants of this gigantic structure. And Hogan and Savage would have to work their way down to the bottom level to either escape or score the fall. I don't think they ever explicitly explained how they could win the match. And there's probably a good reason for that, judging by how this all unfolded. Nobody seemed to have a fucking clue what the rules were. They built this giant structure next to the entranceway, so the actual ring sat empty for this match. I'm sure this was delightful for the fans in the arena to sit there and watch. I'm sure they had a great vantage point of all this. So on one level, Hogan and Savage used powder to blind Ric Flair and Arn Anderson, and so they escaped down to the next level. you know, Bobby Heenan at one point claimed this match is bigger than the Super Bowl or the World Series. Tony Schiavone called it spectacular, which might be one way to put it. Make a long, 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 long story short here. The action spills outside the cage, which I thought meant the end of the match, but apparently not. Z Gangsta and the Ultimate Steroid finally make their way out. They were nowhere to be found for the first 90% of this match. Finally, they come out. I have no idea where they were or what they were doing, nor do I want to know. They drag Hogan and Savage back inside the Tower of Doom cage into the ring on the lower level, and things appear pretty bleak for the Mega Powers at this point, when who should come to their rescue but the Booty Man, who hands them what appears to be crack cocaine and a pair of frying pans. They claimed it was powder, but I have no doubt it was crack. Frying pans only confirmed it. I mean, what the hell else would Ed Leslie be doing with a white powder and some frying pans? Didn't he fall asleep one day? He worked at, like, the Boston, like, transportation department, and he fell asleep in his booth. He had, like, some, like crack on him, and people thought it was anthrax, and he'd, like, shut down the city or something like that. I remember this happening some years back. So, anyway, Hogan and Savage use the crack to blind the heels and start whacking these giant men with the tiniest frying pans you've ever seen. I can't even keep a straight face while talking about this. Then comes the finish, which was Lex Luger knocking out Ric Flair with a loaded glove. Chaos ensues. And in the midst of all of this, Hogan grabs Savage and says, "Let's get the hell out of here." And they head for the cage door. Only Randy Savage realizes at the last minute, "Oh shit, I think I'm supposed to pin the guy first." And so he scampers over, he pins Ric Flair, because again, Ric Flair has to be the one to take the fall. Pins Flair, and then he quickly scurries out of the cage with Hogan. He forgot to pin Ric Flair, because nobody knew what the fucking rules of the match were. And you talk about a slap in the face, yet another uncensored pay-per-view where Ric Flair takes the losing fall. And he does so in a match that included two non-wrestlers who were never seen or heard from again. Why couldn't the walking steroid guy or fucking Debo take the fall in this match? What a mess this whole thing was. Fans were so sick of the Hulk Hogan show at this point that Eric Bischoff turned him heel a few months later. The fact that that heel turn succeeded is a miracle considering how fresh the stain of this match was in people's minds. I watched this match back on the network so it would be fresh in my mind. It almost canceled my subscription and asked for a refund. It's like, this really happened. Somebody thought this would be a good idea, and then in execution, it came off even worse than it was conceived of in the first place. I don't know how they managed to do that, but they did. Eight men against two, and Hogan and Savage win in the end. 13 years ago this week, on March 26, 2001, marked the end of the Monday Night Wars. It was the Raw Nitro simulcast. Nitro was had its spring break show from Panama City Beach. Raw was in Cleveland, I believe. And also, during a pre-Raw meeting with the WWE stars, Vince McMahon thanked everybody for their hard work in helping to bring the company to this very historic day. He said he could have let WCW go under, but there were people there who had families to feed, and by letting them go under, he would have been putting those people out on the street with nowhere to work. He said WCW would be run as its own company, and the goal was to make it successful, not close it down in a year or so. He also said there would be minimal swapping of talent between the two companies, and they could be run as two separate entities. He did say that some WWE guys could leave and go to become part of WCW, but not to expect any inter-promotional matches, at least not right away. You know, I mentioned last week as part of the history segment when the sale took place all those years ago, 13 years ago, and the comments Linda McMahon made, which were very similar to the comments that Vince made here in this pre-show meeting. And you think about what might have been, they had the right idea, it sounded like the right way to go, and it just didn't quite work out that way. And you just wonder how much money potentially they left on the table by going in a different direction. 11 years ago this week, on March 30th, 2003, WrestleMania 19, packed in 54,000 people at Safeco Field in Seattle. Probably one of the more underrated WrestleMania shows of all time. And, you know, I've said before on the show, because somebody asked me about it, and I remember bringing it up, you look at the WrestleMania buy rates from around that period, 17 did a big number, 18 did big, not quite as big. but still did a big number. 20 did a very good number. 21 did like over a million buys. 19 is right there sandwiched in the middle. And like domestically, I think it did like 500 something thousand buys, which is like, I mean, it stands out as a big time disappointment. And I still to this day, I don't know exactly why that is. You had a lot of big matches on the show. It wasn't just a one match show. You had Kurt Angle and Brock Lesnar for the WWE Championship, but that wasn't even the most well promoted match. If anything, that was maybe number three at best. You had Hulk Hogan and Vince McMahon, which was promoted as the real main event. Maybe that had something to do with it. But that was still a big match, and that was a match that turned out a hell of a lot better than I thought it would. Maybe the last great match that either one of those guys had. Although, you know what? I take that back. Vince had a really good match with Shawn at WrestleMania 22. But you had Hogan versus Vince. You had Angle and Lesnar. You had Stone Cold and The Rock, Part 3. You had Shawn Michaels, his first WrestleMania match in 4 years, one-on-one with Chris Jericho, which for some people was kind of like a dream match to see Michaels and Jericho against each other. A lot of people for many years compared Jericho to a younger Shawn Michaels. So those are your four key matches. Those are big matches to have on that pay-per-view. Undertaker's match that year was very forgettable. They had a Cruiserweight title match, I think like a four-way tag title match. For whatever reason, people just weren't buying what they were selling with WrestleMania that year. But it turned out to be a very historic show. That was the show where Brock almost broke his neck, one of the scariest spots I've ever seen on a wrestling show. Guy that big going up and coming straight down on his head. Turned out to be Stone Cold's retirement match. He has not wrestled the match since. That was also the first time I can ever remember The Rock, especially as a heel. Getting a clean pinfall win over Steve Austin, so it was historic for that reason as well. Michaels and Jericho stole the show. They had a great classic match, so there was some good stuff on this show. I remember it being very disappointing as compared to some of the other WrestleManias that were around it. And for as many big matches as they had, it's kind of shocking to me. 10 years ago this week on March 29, 2004, on an episode of Monday Night Raw in Cincinnati, Ohio, Shelton Benjamin pinned Triple H in the main event after a stinger splash and a roll-up when Triple H was distracted by Chris Benoit confronting Ric Flair outside the ring. Yes, believe it or not, Shelton Benjamin got, I think, three different wins over Triple H during that period. And it just didn't really do much for him, unfortunately. Shelton never really got a fair shake, I think, in that company. His promo skills were never that good. I don't think there was ever any doubt that he could go in the ring. He could go in the ring now. You know, he's doing it over in New Japan. If they brought Shelton Benjamin back tomorrow, I think he would be a nice addition to the roster. He wouldn't be a world champion or anything like that. So I think his verbal skills are probably what held him back. But even so, I mean, he should have gone a lot farther than he did. I think that's one of the bigger crimes of that decade in WWE, all the talent that they brought in, who were probably mid-card at best, never went anywhere, never really had a chance. Shelton should have been a little higher up than he was. And 4 years ago this week, on March 28, 2010, Shawn Michaels wrestled his final match, at least so far to date, at WrestleMania 26 in Phoenix. It was him and The Undertaker in the main event. They corrected the mistake they made the year before by not putting Shawn and Undertaker on last at WrestleMania 25. I'm sure Triple H and Randy Orton wish that would have been the case, because their match died a death. But they did go on last this year. The match was really, really good. I still say the WrestleMania 25 match, to me, is the best WrestleMania match of all time, which automatically makes it better than this match. Not that much better, because this was also really good. But it's hard, you know, it's hard to top the original sometimes. Shawn and Scott Hall kind of did that with their SummerSlam ladder match in 95. People still remember the WrestleMania 10 match more so, probably because it was the first of its kind that people were exposed to on TV. It's hard for a sequel to be as good or better than the original. To me, this fell a little bit short, I think partly because we had already seen a lot of the same spots the year before. A lot of the drama of that first match was Undertaker catching Michaels in the ropes, turning it into a tombstone and getting a near fall. People couldn't believe that Shawn Michaels kicked out. Well, they kind of redid the same spot the next year where he gave him a tombstone, Shawn kicked out. They tried to make it out like, oh my God, he kicked out. But it's like, yeah, we saw this the year before. So they had to try to come up with some other new innovative stuff. They didn't really do that. Still had a great match. And I remember Undertaker leaping up in the air and giving him a super tombstone to beat him, which was kind of impressive. And probably didn't feel too good for Undertaker to land on his knees like that. And they didn't play any music at the end. Undertaker, they hugged, they shook hands, Undertaker left. They didn't play any of Shawn's theme music or anything like that. They just left it quiet. And that's how WrestleMania went off the air, with an emotional Shawn Michaels waving to the crowd and leaving for the very last time as an in-ring performer. And if he never comes back to wrestle again, it's a nice moment to go out on. I think if he was going to come back, this would have been it. I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that if Shawn was going to come back to wrestle again, it would have been on the 30th show, and it would have been against Daniel Bryan. And the fact that it didn't happen means, I think it's safe to say that Shawn Michaels has wrestled his last match. And that took place 4 years ago this week. And that was This Week in Wrestling History. If you have questions for the mailbag, keep sending them in to me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. I do read everything that you guys send me, even if I can't get to it on the air. Follow me on Twitter, @Solomonster, and you can also friend me on Facebook. We have a private discussion group on Facebook, and I want to say here that if you haven't joined the discussion group on Facebook, if you haven't applied for membership there, now's the time to do so, because we have WrestleMania coming up in a week. There's going to be a lot of things going on, a lot of discussion going on. Some of you guys will be in New Orleans as well. Now's the time to join that group. There's going to be a lot of activity going on there. There'll be a thread, of course. And so if you are not a part of that group, please sign up now. And also follow me on Twitter, too, for that reason, because I'll be down there. I'll be live tweeting from a lot of the different shows, things that I see, maybe even keeping in touch with some of you guys on Twitter as well, if you're down in New Orleans at different events as well. And we're also inching up closer to 5,000. We're a little over 50 away from that now. And I don't know that we're going to hit it by WrestleMania. If not, we'll come close. So if you're not following me on there, @Solomonster is the place to do so. We have a YouTube channel that has a lot of Sound Off Extra videos up there, some interviews I've done, reviews of a lot of different things. So if you type in Solomonster Sounds Off on YouTube, it'll probably be some of the first stuff that comes up. You can subscribe to us there. You can listen to this show on Stitcher Radio. You can download the show on iTunes. We have a free Android app where you can stream the show for free every single week. A lot of different ways to get the Sound Off. You can make a PayPal donation on thesolomonster.com, which I always appreciate. And I think that covers the important stuff. So this is the final Sound Off before we do the roundtable show later this week in New Orleans. We don't have a solid plan just yet as far as exactly when that's going to happen. I think the day to do it, if we're going to do a roundtable, I think Friday is going to be the day to do it. And if so, I would imagine the show will be up late Friday or early sometime Saturday. But we haven't worked any of this out yet, so please don't take this for gospel. That's why the best way to really keep in touch with what's going on as far as when the next show is going to be and stuff like that is to follow along on Twitter. That's why I'm pushing it so hard. But episode 321 is most likely going to be a roundtable edition live from New Orleans. Myself, Noah Mark, and Brian Blade, and who knows who else may be part of that. And that's when we will do our WrestleMania predictions. This has become an annual tradition, so I am saving the predictions for that show. That will be the show for that weekend. There will not be a second Sound Off. That will be the show. And then we'll be back with the normal show the weekend after that. So that is the plan at this point. I'm looking forward to it. I really am. I've been waiting for this for a while. I know there's been a lot of talk about disappointment in the WrestleMania card this year. I certainly am disappointed in the undercard and how haphazardly they seemingly put this whole thing together, and how many times their minds have changed. They pulled guys from the Battle Royal because they decided, oh, we want them in this match or that match. But as far as the key matches are concerned, the key story they're telling is Daniel Bryan and Triple H. I think they built that up very nicely. Undertaker Brock, not so much. John Cena, Bray Wyatt, I'm digging it. I'm digging the build-up to it. Not thinking that Bray's winning at this point. We'll see what they do on TV this week. But I've been a fan of the build-up to that match. And you know what? Whoever wins, it's nice that John Cena, for a change, is not going to be in the main event of WrestleMania. He's been in the main event of WrestleMania now for, what, 3 or 4 years in a row? And it gets tiring after a while, so he's kind of stepped back a little bit. He's in one of the featured matches against a younger guy, a newer guy that's been getting over. You know, Cena is really third from the top this year, maybe fourth. So it's nice. It's a refreshing change to have him step back and have them put him in something other than the main event for a change. And I do still think that at the end of the day, and maybe I'm tipping my hat as far as my prediction, but this is no big secret that at the end of the day, I think Daniel Bryan is walking out of WrestleMania the World Heavyweight Champion. People are going to be chanting yes and going crazy, and it'll be a nice moment, and it'll be a nice way to culminate the story that started last summer and all the screw jobs and all the obstacles they put in front of him and what happened at the Royal Rumble and everything. Everything that has happened has led us to this point. We'll see if they do the right thing. We'll see what they have in mind. But I'm looking forward to it, and I have to look forward to it because I bought a ticket to the show. So for me to be cynical and expect a bad show means I will have wasted a whole bunch of money, and that will not make me very happy. So I am convinced that this will turn out to be a very good show. And if you plan to watch the show on the network, I said it once, I will say it again. My advice to you, if you have the money, is just pay for it on pay-per-view. Let that be the last pay-per-view you pay for. But I just feel like they're promising that things are going to go well with the stream, but it's impossible to know until that night. And if the stream goes out, you're not going to be very happy. It's going to be very frustrating. I would avoid all of the frustration by just ordering the pay-per-view, not having to deal with any of those issues, and then going forward, you can watch the pay-per-views on the network. That's if I were around, that's what I would be doing. If I wasn't going to the show, I would just buy it. I would pay the money for it on pay-per-view, watch it that way, and just not deal with any of the hassles of the stream. I hope things go well. I really do. I hope they go off without a hitch, but I am skeptical at best. And if you are watching WrestleMania on the network, keep in touch on Twitter and let me know. Let me know how the feed is. Let me know the quality, if it goes out or not. So keep in touch on that. Again, follow along on Twitter, at Solomonster. I hope to see some of you guys down there in New Orleans. I saw a bunch of you last year in New York. There were people who actually recognized me somehow in this sea of 80,000 people at MetLife Stadium and pulled me aside, and that was pretty cool. So if you do, definitely say hi. So I'm looking forward to that, and we'll be back with the roundtable next week. Until then, be well, stay safe. We'll see you down in New Orleans. Take care, guys.
You've been listening to the Solomonster Sounds Off, giving you the good.
Sierra Hotel. India. Echo. Lima.
The bad.
And I am back to headline WrestleMania, so deal with it.
And the ugly.
Then they have a hat. The hat itself is actually nice. It looks like a nice hat. What's wrong with this is it's a beard baseball hat. The entire brim of the hat is a hairy beard. Who the fuck would wear this?
Well, mostly the good.
You can't disregard the fans. You can't disrespect the talent. I think we all want to see a change.
Solomonster Sounds Off.
Since 2007, on the Solomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, and iTunes.
Solomonster Sound Off.